Two of the best stories in golf this week involve someone who has reason to drink out of a trophy and someone who just had reason to drink. Amy Yang just won the KPMG Women's PGA Championship for her first career major at age 34. Her victory tour includes a stop right here with us. And Nick Benz is the everyman hero of the PGA Tour this week. He just Monday qualified for the Rocket Mortgage Classic, surviving a 5-for-4 playoff when he was three beers deep to manage his nerves. Two winners, 2 hours, Golf Today starts right now.
Golf Today.
Welcome into Golf Today. Amy Lynch sitting alongside Jordan Cornett. And Jordan, 28 events down on the 2024 PGA Tour season, 8 to go. The rubber is meeting the road in the Motor City for a lot of guys this week.
And you know what they don't have to do, Amy, this week? Where's Scotty? No Scotty Scheffler this week. So you can go out there and play a little bit more confidently, more comfortable, but a lot of pressure on for what we've deemed the have-nots, if you will, trying to get in.
They really have to be opportunistic because he hasn't given them many opportunities this season so far. But, you know, that those barriers, the top 70, the top 50, there's a lot at stake in these next 8 weeks before the playoffs.
I'll tell you one guy who was very confident going shot for shot this past weekend was Tom Kim going against Scotty Scheffler. As we rewind back to Sunday final round on 18, one stroke back in regulation, Tom Kim from 128 out absolutely sticks it to about 10 feet. He would then have to knock in a birdie putt after some protesters decided to take the show. He would have to relock it. You see the spray paint there. No problem. Tom Kim knocks in the birdie putt to force a playoff in which ultimately world's number one would reign supreme. But an impressive showing for Tom Kim over the weekend in Connecticut. Tom Kim has also made the trip to Detroit for the Rocket Mortgage Classic this week. He headlines the field as the highest ranked player in the field with some stiff competition ahead as you see the likes of Young, Patia, Zalatoris, and Min Woo Lee. With more on Tom Kim, we say hello to Todd Lewis, who joins us live from Detroit. Todd, a lot of travel for the young Korean in the last several weeks. How is he holding up?
Yeah, this is ninth consecutive tournament on the PGA Tour. He seems to be holding up pretty well. He says he's taking care of his body. He's eating well, getting enough sleep, and lots of cold plunges for recovery. So he feels pretty fresh coming back to Detroit. That means a lot to him. You see, back in 2022, Tom was playing on the PGA Tour via sponsor exemptions into tournaments, but he finished 7th at the Rocket Mortgage Classic, which earned him enough FedEx Cup points to have special temporary membership on the PGA Tour and ultimately launched his career. Now he's a 3-time winner on the PGA Tour, nearly became a 4-time winner last week, losing in a playoff to the world's top player, Scotty Scheffler, who happens to be one of Tom's best friends out here on the PGA Tour. And I asked Tom today to kind of summarize his emotions of coming so close but ultimately losing to his good pal.
Number one, I think there's absolutely no shame to losing to Scotty. he had to play really, really good golf, I think, to win, and I think that's what I'm most proud of. I stuck with the lead the whole time, playing the final group, and I had to sleep on the lead for, you know, 3 consecutive nights. And we were really close. You know, we tried our best, but, you know, I've always had this thing where if you lose, if you do your best and you actually play your best and you still lose, it's okay. You know, like, you did your best and it just shows you that you just need to get better. And I really felt like there was no negatives at all. I'm just taking some positives and I'm really happy for him. I really am. You know, it's very one of those unique relationships where you walk away with a loss and, you know, you're still happy for the other person.
That relationship, that tightness that you have with Scotty, what has it done for you on and off the golf course?
I learned a lot. I think his stages of his career, what he went through to get to his spot, he's been through it. And for me to be able to have inside access to someone like that and be able to ask a lot of questions, and obviously, you know, if he wasn't a good person, he wouldn't tell me at all, but he's a very genuine person. And the level that I've seen him kind of progress is what he's accomplished. He hasn't changed when I first met him. You know, when I first met him, he was still 11th in the world and had no wins on tour, but like now he's number one in the world with 12 wins on tour. Completely different status, but he's never changed. You know, he's been so nice to me, he's been so kind, and it just helps me be a better friend, and I think that's how our relationship has progressed.
It was at this tournament you earned special temporary membership on the PGA Tour 2 years ago. How would you describe yourself as a player now compared to then?
definitely a lot more scar tissues. I know. I've learned a lot, and I've just learned so much more about the process. And I think, again, like, having relationships with Scotty and these guys, like, when you have hard times, it just kind of puts things in perspective, and you learn a lot more during the process. And definitely, I feel a lot more. I know it's only been 3 years, but I definitely feel a lot more older.
Finally, this is your ninth tournament in a row. You said during this stretch things are starting to come together, whether it's mechanically, mentally, emotionally, strategically. What are those things that are coming together for you?
I think golf swing. You know, I made a few changes this year. Like I said before, like, I can do it at home and play well, but I can't do it out here, and there's absolutely no point. So the mechanic part was the big thing, kind of getting my body ready for under-pressure tournaments. And obviously the mental aspect, just getting a little sharper, and, you know, with course management, you know, being able to pick and choose when to go for pins and not. So I think the start of the year, I just kind of struggled with that, and to kind of bring it back and to kind of see the stretch and kind of add things to each week and keep riding the momentum has been big for me, and I think it's going to be a good stretch for the end of this year.
You heard Tom talking about the changes he's made in 2024, one of them being his caddy. It is Paul Tesori, longtime veteran caddy out here on the PGA Tour, who worked with Webb Simpson for a number of years, was on the bag for Webb when he won the Players, when he won the U.S. Open. He is now on the bag for Tom Kim, and he's given him some great guidance out here on the PGA Tour. And I talked to Paul, and I asked him, what has Tom elevated over the last few months? One thing has been the fact that he's gone back to his old coach Sam Sear, who coached him when he was a teenager. Sear reunited with Tom Kim at the Players, and they've been working together ever since, and his ball striking has really improved. You heard Tom talk about the mechanics that he has seen elevation in so far in 2024. As a matter of fact, last week he missed only three greens in 72 holes. And they're going to continue to play a lot of golf. They're playing here this week. They are going to take next week off, but they're going to travel to the UK. They're going to play the Genesis Scottish Open. Then they're going to play the Open. Then they're going to stay in Europe to get ready for the Olympics, and then fly back after the Olympics to North Carolina to compete in the Wyndham. I asked Paul Tesori, by the way, the caddy, who's a little bit older than Tom, how's his body doing? And he said, I'm okay. Guys?
You got to run fast to keep up with the kids these days. Thanks, Todd. Well, as Todd noted, Tom Kim came awfully close to a win last weekend at the Travelers Championship. But, and stop me if you've heard this before, Scottie Scheffler was the guy who came away with the trophy. Sixth win of the season in that sudden death playoff. It was also Scheffler's fourth signature event victory of 2024, and has propelled him to a massive lead in the FedEx Cup standings. And we're now going to have a Golf Today roundtable. We're going to welcome in the wit and wisdom of Golf Channel in Rex Hoggard and Ryan Lavner, although we're never quite sure on any given day who's got the wit and who's got the wisdom, but I guess we're about to find out. Rex, I want to start with you. Is there any scenario, as a creative writing exercise for you here, any scenario where Scottie Scheffler is not the PGA Tour Player of the Year by the time the FedEx Cup playoffs end?
I'm going to go with wit here and just say no. There's absolutely no way of doing this. That being said, I do think there could possibly be a conversation if, and only if, Bryson DeChambeau were able to win the Open Championship in 2 weeks when we get to Royal Troon, because that would give him two major championships versus one major championship for Scottie Scheffler. Scottie also has the Players' Championship. So at that point, it becomes a bit of a conversation about quality over quantity, because certainly Bryson's not going to be able to match up with what Scottie has done on the PGA Tour. And it's really important to point out this is a membership vote. So even if Bryson were to win the Open Championship, I wouldn't imagine that would sway too many votes. But at least then, I think it would become a conversation.
I think there's a possibility, Rex, if it's not going to be Bryson DeChambeau, which obviously would not be a PGA Tour Player of the Year award, but I do think Xander Schauffele, if he gets close to running the table over these past 2 months, he's going to have to put together a stretch that at least rivals what Scottie Scheffler has done over these past couple months. Because think about it right now. Scottie Scheffler has nearly a stroke better scoring average. His stroke gain numbers are nearly a half shot better. You look at the number of victories, it's 5 more than Xander Schauffele. The number of top 10s, it's 2 more than Xander Schauffele. So how would Xander Schauffele do this? At the bare minimum, he needs to win the Open Championship for a second major championship this season. I think he needs to win at least 2 of the 3 FedEx Cup playoff events, including the FedEx Cup title. And he probably needs to win, again, the Olympic gold medal, which, although it's not an official PGA Tour event, keep in mind the PGA Tour membership is voting for that. And I do think that could hold a lot of sway. That's a lot of ifs. That's a lot of possibilities But to me, Xander Schauffele is the only player who could potentially threaten, and it's going to take an absolutely historic stretch over these next 2 months.
Rex, let's talk some history here as we make the Scotty and Tiger comparisons all the time. And as we look in the modern era, the most single season wins in a tour season, no surprise, Tiger in 2000 notched 9. Vijay in 2004 had 9. Scotty sits at 6. We don't know how many more events he's going to play in this season, but he'll have enough to chase that number 9. Can he get to 9 or possibly eclipse it, Rex?
He certainly can if you look at the clip he's on right now. He's won 6 times, as you pointed out, in 15 starts. And if my math is right here, that's a 40% winning clip. And you're right, we don't know exactly what his schedule is going to look like, but you would assume, safely, that he's going to play the Open Championship. He's going to take a week off or so and then get ready for the playoffs. So that's 4 events, assuming he plays all 3 of the playoff events. And then I'm going to throw the Olympics in there, as Ryan just pointed out. Not an official event, but it's probably going to weigh in to this equation one way or the other. Let's say he can win at least 2 of those going into East Lake, the Tour Championship. I do think you could have an interesting conversation about the idea that, okay, maybe he could reach that number. Where this gets a little weird, and we pointed this out time and time again, Scotty has never won a PGA Tour event in either July or August, so it seems like the deck is stacked against him. But when it comes to Scotty and the clip he's on right now, I'm not voting against him doing anything.
Rex, I think you'd have to put the over-under line at, what, 7.5 overall season victories for Scotty Scheffler. If you're looking at this practically, the Open Championship has been Scotty's worst major in what is a pretty limited sample size with 3 starts, just have 3 top 25 finishes. The Olympics, that's going to be the weakest field that he's going to be facing all year long. You have to like him at Le Golf National. How about Memphis? He does not have a top 30 finish there in his past 2 starts. Castle Pines is a new venue for him. I do like him at East Lake as well. Look at his scoring average there in his career, 68.44. You would think, even though he's had the incredibly historic season he has, it's wild to think that he could not be the FedEx Cup champion since he's starting that week with just a 2-shot advantage. So I do think it's realistic he can pick off 2 more, but I think the line's probably set at 7.5 just for practical reasons.
Ryan, is there any kind of Taylor Gooch asterisk in any of this in terms of this phenomenal season he's putting together because of the division in the game that he isn't actually beating all of the best players in the world? You know, John Rahm obviously isn't there. Cam Smith isn't there. I remember asking Padraig Harrington years ago, did it bother him that Tiger wasn't in the field in 2 of his majors? And Padraig's answer was, well, you can only beat those who show up. So there is a valid defense to that. But does it in any way diminish the Scotty Scheffler season because of the division in this game?
No, I don't think so, Eamon. I mean, it wasn't until recently that all of the best players in the world were playing together on the PGA Tour tournament week in and week out. You think back to the strength of the European Tour 20, 30 years ago. Like, I don't think anyone looks back at the accomplishments of the players in the 90s and early 2000s and think that those were diminished because not all the best players were there. I do understand the discourse at this moment, because when you look at head-to-head between Scotty Scheffler and Bryce DeChambeau, Bryson has beaten Scotty in 2 of the 3 like tournaments that they have played in. But I do think Scotty's resume this season stands on its own. The Masters, the Players' Championship, 4 signature wins against the best PGA Tour players that they have to offer. Strokes game numbers we haven't seen in more than a decade. He's emphatically beating the players that are in front of him. I do think, to your point though, Eamon, that in 5 to 10 years from now, this era is going to be viewed as one of bifurcated talent. You know, so I don't think that's necessarily an asterisk. I just think it's additional context for what we're viewing.
It's a small sample size, but I think it's an important sample size. And I'm talking about the major championships here, where he has gone head-to-head with the players who joined LIV Golf. And we've seen him have success, obviously winning the Masters. You go back to the PGA Championship and whatever happened on that Friday morning between he and Detective Brian Gillis Louisville Police Department. We'll never know on that front. But if you look at what he's done head-to-head against these players, specifically Bryson DeChambeau, I think it proves the point. He is by far the best player in the game right now. And even though the world rankings probably aren't going to be a very fair comparison on there, if you look at Data Golf, which does include finishes in LIV Golf events, Scotty still has a sizable advantage on that front. Maybe, as Ryan pointed out, 10 years from now, we're having a different conversation. But I believe that data set, sort of that window that we can see them going head-to-head, is enough to show that Scotty would beat anyone you put in front of him.
I guess my only issue with it, guys, is the fact with Lav, you tell me, but I feel like you watch a guy like Bryson pop up and see what he did at Pinehurst. You see other guys step in and apply some pressure, but then they disappear. There's something about, in any sport, an omnipresent pressure of a presence of somebody. And if you don't have that necessarily alongside you, you don't feel the pressure to perform week in and week out because you know, hey, when some of those bigger names that I'm not seeing until the majors aren't there, well, I'm amassing numbers to put together a historic season because they're not there for the others.
I see your point, Jordan, and certainly when you look at last year, on the PGA Tour, you look at what John Rahm and Scottie Scheffler were having the debate on who the PGA Tour Player of the Year was going to be. You had John Rahm kind of pop up, and he had four wins in very short order. But Scottie Scheffler was consistently excellent week in and week out. Again, you did not have some of the players who had defected to live. You didn't have the Cameron Smiths. You didn't have the Bryson DeChambeaus, the Brooks Koepkas, the Dustin Johnsons. At least this time around, you do not have the John Rahm competing against him week in and week out on the PGA Tour. I think anyone, regardless of your affiliation or which tour you're a fan of, PGA Tour or LIV Golf, I think it is indisputable that Scottie Scheffler is the best player in the world. I think it's just a bummer for golf fans that we only really get to see all the best players together four times a year.
Rex, this was the last of the signature events that we just saw Scottie Scheffler win at the Travelers Championship. There's been a lot of debate over a lot of issues, whether it's the cadence of the schedule, the size of the fields, the FedEx Cup point allocations, the sponsor exemptions. There's a lot for headquarters to chew on over this. Which one of those issues do you think needs to be, if any of them need to be addressed at all in your mind, which one needs to be addressed most urgently?
Hey, man, I'm going to be a little selfish here and actually pick two, talking with players. I think field size is an issue, and certainly the PGA Tour Policy Board addressed that last week. They sort of set the ceiling, or the floor, I should say, at 72 players. There's going to be an alternate list going forward, and I think that's important because we ended up with some weird fields this year because you ended up having guys having to play as onesomes the entire week. You had 68 and 60-man fields. That doesn't work out for anyone. However, if you talk to players, I think most will tell you that something closer to 80, maybe even 90 players is going to be a better representation going forward for no other reason than it just creates a better product. And you're also creating more playing opportunities for the rank and file. And the other half of that, I think when you look at the cadence of the schedule, and I think this is really important, what they were trying to do was create sort of two, three full field events going into two to three major championships / signature events. They did that the first year around, but what we ended up with is what we saw over these last 3 weeks when you had the Memorial Tournament, which was brutally hard, going into the U.S. Open, which was equally brutally hard, and then the Travelers Championship on the back end. You had tired players who didn't feel like being out there playing during this particular window. So I think the tour is going to have to take a really hard look at the schedule and just create a better cadence so you don't end up putting these players, these top players, through this grind that they're not playing their best golf.
Yeah, Rex, I am agreeing with you on this one. I'm not as offended by the field size or the amount of churn that we are or aren't seeing in the signature events, but I'm really, like you, kind of honing in on the timing of these. You know, you had the kickoff event at Kapalua, and then you lost any sort of momentum that was built up because you didn't have one again for 4 weeks' time. Then you crammed four in an eight-week stretch. You had two before a major championship. Well, that was too hard of a test. And you had sort of everyone on site and golf fans at home looking ahead to the next week's major championship. You had two of those signature events after a major championship, which felt like a letdown. I understand why they're doing it, the PGA Tour, is because you have this Aon Swing 5 in Next 10. But I don't think it's the right move for the PGA Tour if you're compromising the events that you have your biggest and best fields sort of to try and get this cadence of signature events and full field events. I don't think it quite worked in 2024 where those signature events were really highlighted like they should have.
Rex and Lav both providing wit and wisdom, I think, Eamon. We appreciate the time, fellas. Look forward to speaking soon.
Sounds good, guys.
Well, Georgia Abo's journey to this week's Dow Championship on the LPGA Tour has been a pretty remarkable one. She's going to join us right after the break ahead of her start in this week's team event out in Michigan. Welcome back to Golf Today. With another major championship in the books, the LPGA Tour is heading to the Midwest for the Dow Championship, one of the most unique tournaments of the season, featuring 72 teams of two players each. And here's how it works. Each day, the format will alternate between foursomes and fourballs, similar to the Zurich Classic on the PGA Tour. There will be no Rolex World Ranking points distributed for this event, but a victory will go down as an official LPGA Tour win for both players on the team holding up that trophy come Sunday.
One of the players that will be teeing it up this week is Georgia Abo, who earlier this month won the John Shippen National Women's Invitational. The win earned Georgia exemptions into two LPGA tournaments. The first was the Meyer Classic a couple weeks ago. The second is the Dow Championship this week. Here's a look at her impressive bio. You take a look, she's done a lot. She's a rising star in this sport. The Invitational providing those two exemptions. As a 17-year-old, she became the first Nigerian to qualify for the Ladies European Tour, and she won in her pro debut in 2018, and still a lot in front of her. In the interim, we welcome her in right now. Georgia, we appreciate you joining us. And as we get ready for the Dow Championship this week, it's going to be a really fun experience for you because you're rejoined with a friend of yours in Lakarebe Abe and an opportunity to pair with her to play for this championship. How does that enhance this week for you?
Well, it just adds, I guess, the cherry on top of the cake, really being able to compete in an LPGA tournament once again this week. And I'm just grateful for all the opportunities that I've gotten, especially through the John Shippen events and through the sponsors Meyer and Dow.
Georgia, what were the nerves like coming down the stretch in the Shippen event for you? Because you're playing against high-caliber players and you know what's at stake. Were you jittery on those final few holes?
No, it was more so the first few, and then I kind of just calmed down and relaxed into the round. And then going into the final few holes, I was just focused on trying to make some last-minute birdies in case anything in front happened. But in the end, I just kind of hit the fairways, hit the greens, and just had easy pars to finish.
Georgia, how important is the John Shippen for the game of golf?
Well, it's very important that golfers from all backgrounds have the opportunity to go as far as they would like to go in the game of golf. And I'm just so grateful to everyone who's involved in the event. And it just continues on John Shippen Jr.'s legacy as the first American professional golfer and moving forward into, I guess, this new era of golf.
Do you feel more or less pressure now that you're in a team event, Georgia, given that, you've got a friend there beside you, but you also kind of feel responsible for somebody else's success this week? Is it easier or tougher?
I don't really know. I think at the end of the day, golf is pretty tough. But I think this week is actually a bit more relaxed and a bit more fun than some other weeks. And so I'm just grateful to be out here and playing on a beautiful golf course.
Georgia, golf gripped you at a very early age. Can you give us a little bit of background on the genesis of how you decided to be on this path to become one of the rising stars in the sport?
Well, after my father got into the game, thanks to my grandmother, I just ended up competing a lot in England where I was living at the time, and then moving forward to just playing in the summers in America and a little bit in Europe growing up. It's kind of just been a progression really from when I was really young to just competing and traveling a lot. And so I think I just got very used to that aspect that I now regularly encounter as a professional golfer. And I'm just so blessed for the parents and the family that I have.
You had a pretty cool moment as a kid with Lorena Ochoa that had a big impact on you, Georgia. Tell us about it.
So I was watching, I believe it was her last British Open, and I was just watching in the crowd, and she somehow spotted me in the crowd, you know, the 7-year-old, 8-year-old, and she threw me a golf ball from her bag. And so that kind of cemented it in my mind that I wanted to become the best player in the world.
Yeah, Georgia, it's interesting. A lot of athletes feel pressure to perform for themselves, for their family, for maybe even their community. You being English-born but of Nigerian descent, and as you look around, there's not a lot of countrymen and women of Nigeria in this sport. Is that an added pressure for you to go out there and perform and do it at the high level you currently are?
No, for me, I don't really see it as an added pressure. I understand that I have responsibility for the Nigerians who are up and coming, who I hope will eventually turn pro in the coming years and join me out here. But really, I just see it as another reason to keep working hard, keep my head up, and just enjoy the game of golf while I can.
How do you assess success this week for you, Georgia? Is it based on the experience you're going to have there? Because you have played LPGA Tour events before, or is it very much based on the result that you want to achieve?
Well, I think this week already for me has been a success to be able to have the opportunity to play and play with La Caribe this week is already a great blessing. And I thank God that I'm here and I'm ready to go for tomorrow. But overall, yes, I would love a win. Me and La Caribe, we would both love to be on the LPGA Tour as soon as possible. And I think this week is just another week to just be grateful to be out on the golf course. A lot of people would have loved to be here, but they couldn't make it. And yeah, I'm just grateful to God for all the opportunities I've gotten this year so far.
With the experience you've been accumulating on the LPGA Tour, you played recently at the Meyer LPGA Classic as well. What's the learning curve like here versus what you've experienced on the Ladies European Tour? Does it suddenly start to feel a little bit steeper when you're up against this kind of competition?
Well, I think first off would just be the courses are obviously different. The weather conditions are different. And it's a slightly different environment. There are different responsibilities we have playing in an LPGA event. But I think at the end of the day, golf is golf. We're all trying to finish with the least amount of strokes in the into the hole. And I think playing on the Ladies European Tour definitely helped prepare me for what I've encountered out here on the LPGA. And I'm just so grateful for the past few years on the LET and moving forward with my career.
Eamon, I think it's very clear that Georgia is unflappable.
Yes,
simply does
is.
Not feel the pressure. Georgia, we appreciate the time ahead of the Dow Championship. Best of luck this week. We look forward to watching you.
Thank you.
Well, the newest major champion in golf is up here next. Amy Yang just won the KPMG Women's PGA Championship. One of the most popular wins of the year, as you can see. We'll be right back.
Jordan and Eamon back here on Golf Today, and what a scene it was for LPGA Tour vet Amy Yang, who last week won her first major championship at Sahali Country Club. At one point, holding a 7-shot lead on Sunday, Amy able to calm her nerves and notch a 3-shot victory. Amy joined this great list of major champions at Sahali. 1998 PGA Championship, Vijay Singh walked away with the win, his first of three majors. In 2010, Bernard Langer won the U.S. Senior Open at 52 years old, the second of his record 12 senior majors. In 2016, Sahali hosted the KPMG Women's PGA Championship for the first time, and Brooke Henderson beat Lydia Ko in a playoff for her first major victory at 18 years old. Now, Amy Yang. And we welcome in our KPMG Women's PGA champ now. And Amy, a few days removed from that massive win, finally garnering your first major, putting it all in perspective a few days later, how does it feel?
I'm still trying to process. It's been a very busy few days, but I'm so happy and grateful to go through all this.
What was the phone call like back to your family? Because they sacrificed a lot earlier in your life to get you into this game and help you develop. What was that phone call like after you won?
Oh, we were all very happy, and my parents were very emotional. My brother and sister-in-law was very excited about it. Like, I talked to every single one of them, and everyone's still celebrating back in Korea.
Amy, the images were super cool of people you compete against, but also your country women, your colleagues in the sport. They seem more excited than you to win this thing, which speaks to the person you are. When you see the images of the champagne shower, how did it feel in that moment?
Oh, I was so grateful for this overwhelming love from my friends. You know, they're very warm-hearted people, and we try to help each other and have lots of fun out here. And I was, I feel so grateful for them.
During that final round, Amy, you played as though you had already won a half dozen majors. You didn't appear nervous at all. Were you as calm on the inside as you appeared on the outside?
No, actually, I felt pretty nervous out there. And I told my caddy walking up the 18th hole that I feel this is the longest 18 holes I ever played. As I was pretty nervous out there, but I try to keep, you know, calm and be patient until the end. Yeah.
Amy, you were once asked, is it fair to say the reason you're playing so long still on the tour is because you were chasing that first major win? And quickly you said, yes. You've done it now, so what's next?
You know, I haven't really think about it, but a medal at the Olympic could be a very big goal for me.
You're going to play coming up now with the AIG Women's Open. You've actually had a couple of good finishes in that tournament on a couple of difficult Lynx golf courses at Birkdale and at Carnoustie. Is that a kind of golf or style of golf that you enjoy playing because it's so different to what you see the rest of the year?
I do enjoy a lot of challenging golf courses. It makes me more focused every shot. And I'm really looking forward to play St. Andrews.
Amy, you mentioned, you know, the opportunity to once again represent your country heading to Paris and playing the Olympics for the second time. If you think back to your first appearance in the Olympics back in 2021, what do you take from that experience heading into this one, this go round?
I played 2016 Rio. That was my first one. That felt very different compared to our events on the LPGA. You know, I'm very honored to be one of the Korean team, and I'm just so excited. Very, very looking forward to play.
What changed for you heading into the KPMG, Amy? You'd missed the last two cuts, but suddenly you found your form when you got to Sahali. Had you worked on something specific, or is it just golf?
No, same thing. I've been hitting balls right, pretty Amy, solid, and game felt right there, but just my score wasn't showing up. But I just kept telling myself I can do this, I can come back, and just kept trying.
Amy, the road back, recovering from injury, it had to be a challenging one for you as an athlete. What was that experience like, returning from injury, to get to such a great height that you achieved this past weekend?
Yeah, I'm just so grateful for that. I had second tennis elbow on my left arm, and I thought I'd be done playing very soon. But I'm very happy to recover everything and playing good again. Yeah.
Amy, you had, I think it was 12 top five finishes in major championships before getting the win. And this is an easier question to ask now that you have the win, but is there a major that you look back on earlier in your career that you really thought that should have been yours at the time, but just got away from you?
I'm sorry, I couldn't quite understand your question.
When you look back at your previous performances in majors, you've come very close to winning before. Is there a major that you look back on that you were close, that you thought you should have won but didn't win?
Oh, I would say U.S. Women's Open. Yeah, that was I thought I got it pretty close and I wanted to win. Yeah, but, you know, I gave my best on that week. Yeah.
Well, you certainly gave your best this past week, and now I'm sure it sounds great to hear Amy Yang, major champion. Congratulations, Amy, and we appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Well, let's see who's where in the race to the CME Globe. And there's no shock at the top of this list. Nelly Korda in the lead by a wide margin thanks to her 6 wins this season. Lilia Vu moved inside the top 10 with her runner-up finish last week. Amy Yang isn't on this list, but she did move up to 15th place after that victory at Sahali. And another week, another major. It's how golf seems to go during the summer months. The US Senior Open is at Newport Country Club this week, one of the most historic venues in the sport. Right after this break, we're going to be joined by a man who knows this place better than anyone in the field. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Golf Today. And where's the time gone? There's just 8 PGA Tour events remaining before the FedEx Cup playoffs this week. The tour is in Detroit, Michigan for the Rocket Mortgage Classic. First round coverage beginning 3 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. And what a story has come about from this week's Monday qualifier. Ryan French of Monday Q introduced the golf world and the world itself to Nick Benz, who had never played in a PGA Tour sanctioned event. He's an employee at Golf Galaxy. He played his way into a 5-for-4, 8-hole playoff. The kicker of it all, well, he thought he was most likely in, thought he'd kick back, wait for the scores to come in. He started to get a little nervous, so he had one beer, which became two, which ultimately ended up being three. And he found out he had to go back out and play more golf. He did. Had to play 8 more holes to ultimately get it done and get through. And Nick, the overnight sensation, still riding the high, joining us now out there in Detroit. And Nick, obvious first question. I mean, it's been a whirlwind. What have the last few days been like for you?
It's been unlike anything I can even imagine. If you would have told me everything that's happened in the last 25-ish hours, I never would have believed you. Going from just a normal guy working at a golf store, trying to play as much golf as I can on the side, to turning into what it has. I mean, I've had guys that play on the PGA Tour consistently come up to me on the range and say, hey, we were glued to our phones during the playoff in the caddy lounge, and that's just so cool to see. And that'll never get old, and it's something that I hope I can take with me forever.
You mentioned you normally work in a golf store, Nick. What does a typical week look like for you? Because this clearly is not your typical week.
No, definitely not. Typical week for me is I'm usually there in the summer anywhere from 2, 3, or 4 days a week. This time of year when I start doing like Monday qualifiers, I have to pre-qualify. So usually I would work basically Monday, Tuesday, or Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, try to pre-qualify Friday, go back to work Saturday, and then go for a practice round Sunday, and then do the Monday qualifier Monday. And then if I get through, it's never happened before, so we've never had to worry about that until now. But if I didn't get through, then I would go back to work on Tuesday like I was supposed to yesterday.
So, Nick, one beer becomes two, becomes three. Would a fourth beer, would that have been dangerous? I mean, would we not have been in this position had we had a fourth?
It definitely, we were riding a fine line as it was for sure. So I tried to keep it on the right side of things and not take it too far. Who's to say? The playoff might have been over earlier. It might have been over for different reasons. I might have made a quick bogey and been out of there. So three would seem to be the magic number, and we'll stick with that.
It's pretty cool. You know, you've heard from some pretty special people, some people, big names in the golf world. I'm curious, who's been the most out of the woodwork pop-up name that's reached out to you? We've obviously seen the tweet from Kevin Kisner, but was it a random ex? Was it an old classmate? Was it an old neighbor? Who'd you hear from where you're like, wow, they even heard about this?
Probably when I was in player or caddy dining yesterday and I got a phone call from Pat McAfee. That was probably the most wild time of my life. You know, as someone who loves the show and being from Indianapolis and it being right up the street from me, it's just crazy to get a phone call and just know instantly that voice. It's iconic. So I knew exactly who I was talking to before he even introduced himself.
Well, you are at heart still a golfer, and you're in a competition now, and you obviously want to prove something this week. You've proved something already. What are your expectations now heading into this week? Is it just to try to soak up as much of the experience as you can, or are you very much results driven this week?
I think it's fair to say it'll probably be a little bit of both, but probably 75% of the first and 25% of the latter. I think everyone that I've talked to, whether it's guys on tour or it's people that have been in the shoes before or people in the media, everyone's pretty much just unanimously said, just go out and enjoy the moment. You never know, especially someone in my shoes, this may never happen again. So just try to enjoy it as much as I can. Obviously, I'll try to play as well as I can, but I got here having as little expectations as possible. So hopefully we can keep that going forward and maybe play well. Obviously, if I play bad and I miss the cut, it's still going to be a week to remember. But ideally, I play well and can make the cut, and we'll take it from there.
I got to know, Nick, is this PTO? Are we taking days off? How has Golf Galaxy, your employer, been through this whirlwind run of yours?
Oh, man. They've been really good. I actually have not called off for yesterday or today yet. I think they know. So my boss has been very supportive. I've had text messages and phone calls from people from the corporate structure. Everyone from my store has been super, super excited for me. But it's been unlike anything I could ever experience. I mean, I think they're going through it as well at Golf Galaxy. I don't think this has ever happened for them either. So they're kind of in the same world I am, or no one really knows what to do.
And I guess we'll see how the rest of the week plays out as to whether or not you show up for work next Tuesday as well. You might actually have a gig somewhere else.
True.
By then. When you're out there on the range, Nick,
hopefully,
you're surrounded by all these great players. Has there been one moment where you've just sort of someone's walked up to you or you've seen somebody hitting balls beside you where you think you're pinching yourself, you can't believe you're actually doing this?
Yeah, that actually happened about 2 hours ago. I had to introduce myself to Wesley Bryan because I love watching his videos. So I was like, I got to go up and say hello to him. And when I left the range, my caddy was still there in my spot. And while I was talking to Wesley, I see Jimmy Walker set his bag to my right and Ricky Fowler set his bag to my left. And it took everything in me to try not to go back to that spot. I even tried calling my caddy. I'm like, we're not hitting balls there anymore. This is done. We're not going over there. And Wesley was actually the one that was like, no, no, you're going over there and you're doing it. So he actually made the introduction, and both those guys were super, super friendly. Obviously, both those guys have done so many great things in the game. So the nerves were definitely there the first few shots after getting back to the bag and trying to hit some range balls next to those guys.
Nick, it's such a unique story. Some of the stuff you read, you don't know what's true and what's not. I see that financially a lot of fans are getting behind you, sending money your way to kind of support what's been a wild few days. That, as you nod your head, that seems to be accurate. What's the tally at right now?
I actually don't even know. I do know that I've gotten probably 7 Venmo notifications on my email that people have been trying to log in. Login's attempted, but thank goodness for multi-factor authentication, because otherwise who knows where that money would be going. But yeah, everyone's been great. And it hasn't even been like one or two massive amounts. It's just been everyone seems to be pitching in 5, 10, 20 bucks, whatever it is. It just the amount of support, and I try to read all the comments that go along with it and not just take the money from it. I try to read everything and basically, you know, understand where this money's coming from, why it's getting to me, and I try to be as appreciative of that as I can be.
This is one of the great everyman hero golf stories of the season so far. What are the chances you're going to have a beer sponsor out of this event?
Man, I don't know. It would be definitely something I would consider if it was the right one. I wouldn't just do any of them. But certainly there have been some that have reached out. But someone who doesn't do this ever, I don't know the logistics behind it on how I get logos on shirts. I don't know how. I mean, I just got a care package from Travis Matthews, as you can see. But other than that, I don't know how I would get a company logo on my shirt in 24 hours in time for me to tee off tomorrow. So I try not to take anything without knowing I'm going to use it. So I basically just kind of let everything slide. And if I play well, then hopefully I can take advantage of those opportunities some other time down the road.
Nick, you go off at 2:22 tomorrow. I don't know if you're a superstitious guy, but as I get to know you more and more, I'm a massive fan. With that, I'm curious, do we have 3 beers before we go off tomorrow?
I doubt it. I really do. I think that was probably just a one-time thing. And really, what's crazy is that we're probably not staying here having this conversation if it's not for those 3 beers, which is really interesting to say. But I guess it's something that a lot of people relate to. I may have one with lunch if I'm really feeling anxious, but it's a slippery slope to try to cure anxiety with alcohol that I have no desire of going down that road. But if I do feel it, I may have one beer, but it's not on the plans as of now.
Summer Shandy, what was the beer of choice?
You nailed it right on the head. How did, yeah, that was exactly
Indianapolis
what it was.
Guy. I mean, I'm around a bunch of them, man. I have a Butler brother, so I know how it goes.
Oh, yeah, you know exactly what it's like.
Well, Nick, an incredible story. You seem so calm, cool, and collected through it all, which is probably what got you here, man. Everybody's behind you rooting for you moving forward. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I'm glad I put on a good face, because inside it is not calm, cool, and collected. So I'm happy I can put that out there. But thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Really is one of the best stories of the year so far. Nick has plenty of time to rest for tomorrow. He's got the last tee time of the day, 2:22 p.m. Eastern, alongside Rafael Campos and Anders Albertsson.